Hello, the internet, and welcome to this episode of the Weekly Zeitgeist. These are some of our favorite segments from this week, all edited together into one nonstop infotainment laugh extravaganza. So without further ado, here is the Weekly Zeitgeist. So we wanted to start off with a video that went viral over the weekend that was made by actually the video director of Deadspin, Timothy Burke. It's like a super cut of all these local news stations who were given the same script from Sinclair Media, where they're basically making a commentary on how the mainstream media is lying to people.
Yeah, which is interesting because the Sinclair Broadcasting Group, they own right now about like 173 affiliate stations around the country.
Right.
And there's a merger right now that they're trying to get pushed through, which would combine them with Tribune Media. And that would mean that 7 out of 10 households in this country would be served by a Sinclair station in some form. So I guess the way to think of it is because Sinclair owns all these local news stations, they can tell all these news stations what to say during their broadcast. It's not ABC or NBC or CBS or whatever. It's the affiliate stations. The ownership is the ones that are giving these directives straight down to the anchors. And a lot of anchors were very uncomfortable with having to do what they call these must-read segments. And this was a must-read coming from on high from Sinclair, which is a right-leaning, Trump-friendly media group.
Right-leaning is a nice way to put it.
Yeah, exactly. So you'll see when
they're vampires. They're literal vampires that live in coffins.
Yeah, and then they're basically trying to gaslight the entire country. So basically, this is a supercut of one of the scary messages about fake news that's out there. But when you cut them all together and realize they're all lockstep saying the same thing, it's fucking scary. So check this out.
Hi, I'm Fox San Antonio's Jessica Headley.
And I'm Ryan Wolf.
Our greatest responsibility is to serve our Treasure Valley communities.
The El Paso, Las Cruces communities.
Eastern Iowa communities.
Mid-Michigan communities.
We are extremely proud of the quality, balanced journalism that CBS 4 News produces.
But
we are concerned about trouble and trying to be responsible, one-sided news stories plaguing our country.
The sharing of biased and false news has become all too common on social media. More alarming, some media outlets publish these same fake stories without checking facts first.
The sharing of biased and false
news has become all too common on social media.
More alarming, some media
This is extremely dangerous to our democracy.
Yeah, so that is extremely dangerous to our democracy.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, so basically right now, so imagine if this merger goes through, they will control 215 stations, and Tribune Media also holds a lot of stations in swing states like Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Ohio, and also massive markets like New York, Chicago, and L.A. So more than likely, all you American Zeitgang people out there probably live in a Sinclair market. Most people get their news still from their local news because they still feel they can trust it because they're like, oh, these are people from my town. They're not getting their fucking orders from somewhere else.
Right.
Well, that is rapidly changing.
Yeah. When we focus on news bias, we tend to focus on national news, Fox News versus, you know, the right focuses on CNN. But yeah, local news is wildly biased in some cases. And, you know, when you look at, for instance, the number of how they report on crime, there's a huge bias towards reporting crimes by people of color. Like 40% of the crimes they put on the local news will be people of color, and only like 10% of the crimes committed are people of color.
Right. And I mean, this is a logical evolution from the traditional conservative media strategy, which is they have the money. The right always has more money. So that's, you saw this happen in talk radio.
Right.
When's the last time you heard a left voice on the radio?
Yeah, talk radio. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we're all in podcasting now.
Exactly. It's
well,
true.
I think people got into podcasting, and podcasting is partially growing because there wasn't a left alternative to, you know, local talk radio.
And you're seeing this now, like, luckily, right, like, our generation and the generation that comes after us doesn't watch local news, which is good. Like, this strategy, as terrifying as that video was to hear, and it was really scary. Like,
It's like some fucking Orwellian shit.
It really was. But the thing to remember is just like, okay, don't watch local news. Wait, you don't already? Great. Keep not watching local news.
Well, I think it's important, though, too, because most people will have to interact at some point with someone who watches this and takes it for reality. And what's crazy is a few people like InfoWars types dudes were retweeting it with no context, being like, check this out. Yeah. And the response from a lot of people on the right was like, yeah, see, check out the mainstream media. They're all fucking brainwashed. And then like other people in the Twitter threads would be like, yo, this is owned by a conservative guy and it's pro-Trump propaganda arm and they're weaponizing your local news. And they were like, well, all I'm seeing is CBS, ABC, and NBC. Tell me how this is like right-leaning. They're all against Trump. And a lot of people, you have to understand.
They don't get it.
Affiliate news stations are independently owned, but they just have an agreement with CBS. They'd be like, okay, I fuck with you. We'll air your shows, but we'll do the local news. We'll put the CBS logo on it, but you don't tell us what to run because that's just part of, you know, keeping CBS from controlling all the news everywhere. So with these independent stations, they actually do get their marching orders from Sinclair, which is why they post shit like the other must runs have been stuff like the Me Too movement is getting out of control and like, or just like mentioning stories that are in another state. Like you'll be in Tulsa and they'll be talking about someone in St. Louis who got their job taken away because they're a conservative.
Right. And so, but the silver lining on this is that the people watching local news are dying because they're really dumb and have gutted our healthcare system.
Sure.
So it's only old people and they're dying at a rapid rate. The death rate is going up. And people aren't going to live as long as they did before. So I think we're in the clear. if we all die, we don't have to deal with this problem.
Well, unfortunately, there was a report released last week that says that news that is fake travels way faster and way further on Twitter and social media, essentially, because it allows
people... Is that real?
That's real.
God damn it.
That is an actual study by MIT. It was basically two guys who... experienced the Boston bombing living in Boston.
Yeah.
And we're like, you know, the only place you could get reports was on social media. So they saw like, you know, that 90% of what they read was fake. So they did they basically ingested all of Twitter from 2006 to 2016.
And then they killed themselves.
Exactly. And they found that stories that were fake traveled faster, got more retweets, got more likes. And they were like, yeah, it kind of makes sense because fake stories are able to say whatever the fuck they want to.
Right.
Yeah, so it's just wish fulfillment.
Right.
So I think this is a problem in any medium. That's the thing about this particular story that they did the illustration about, because it could go either way. They're talking about fake news, which is something the right also talks about.
Right.
So that's why I think they're able to be like, well, what maybe they're talking about CNN or maybe they're
like,
talking about Fox News.
We won't say Pizzagate, but we'll misinform you.
Right.
Right. Well, and then some of these guys have done Pizzagate stories.
Right. Yeah.
Some of these affiliates, like I remember last year there was a story where one of these like guys on the local news was very plainly alt-right and just reporting on Pizzagate as though it was a real thing that was happening.
Sinclair executive forced their stations to run pro-Trump and anti-Clinton segments during their evening and morning local news programs. It's just that this was the one that they sent out that was a word-for-word script that they had to read, sort of, you know, casting aspersions on the national news that people got, which, you know, is...
Yeah, and a lot of anchors had a problem with it because they're like, this is not fucking journal. Like, you know what I mean? Like, the few people that are left that are like, this is fucked. Like, we can't just be wholesale.
Yeah. We're counting on our local Ron Burgundy's to like be the voice of reason, the Edward R. Murrow's to stand up.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I cannot wait for that. Like, I want to see them march. I want to see their strike. I want to see them form a union.
Right.
More at 10. Yeah. Hell no, we won't go.
We'll see if we're going to have a sick and tired and not going to take it anymore moment coming out of one of these broadcasts.
In December, Kushner bragged that the Trump campaign had struck a deal with Sinclair executives to provide exclusive interviews during the primaries and presidential campaign, and Sinclair agreed to run them as is without any commentary.
Cool.
So, yeah, so that's...
One-sided. There's one side for you.
If nothing else, that shows the power of Sinclair Media, that clip. And
yeah.
Based on what they've done in the past, it's clearly going to be a problem for democracy as long as the Trump...
I want to see it go as far right as it can go. I want to see some fucking, you know, dude named like... Chuck McGonagall just be like, now more with the weather, here's a Jew. And it's just like a guy dressed like a rabbi, like my rabbi for my bar mitzvah. He's like, I'm feeling, because I can control it, I'm feeling rain tomorrow.
Chemtrails. Tell us about the chemtrail report.
Right.
Oh, well, we're putting him out there and we're making him make you gay. So good luck.
So that's a stay indoors warning from weather rabbi.
Weather Jew.
So yesterday there was a active shooter on the YouTube campus in Northern California. It was one of those situations where, as the story was developing, we were getting updates on Twitter about, you know, facts that people on the ground knew that turned out to be completely false, that it was like a love triangle thing. I think that was started by CNN's like expert on something. And like the front page of Drudge Report is covering this to make it seem like the shooter, which was a woman for once, was this
for
like.
Right? When I heard about the active shooter, I was like, oh my God, like, who is it? And it's like, it's a woman. I was like, oh, so she has got a reason.
For a second, you were like,
I was like instantly relieved.
Right. But so the way the right is responding to the shooter is. You know, on the front page of Drudge, you see it covered as both, you know, portraying her as this like freaky deaky leftist who was into weird sexual stuff and PETA, like the quote on the front page of Drudge is, wants you to be sex slaves, which she actually like advocates for abstinence. So I don't see how that is.
Well, they took, something out of context where she's like, the system wants you to be sex slave or something
right.
like that. And they just put wants you to be sex slaves.
Right, to make it seem like she was into some weird leftist sexual thing. But no, she was actually pro-abstinence. But basically, her motives, it seems like, were actually based on YouTube. She thought that YouTube was, you know, demonetizing and hiding her channel from her audience and wasn't giving her good enough placement in search results, essentially, which is a complaint that you hear people...
From a lot of YouTubers.
Yeah, from a lot of YouTube users. And incredibly, when you go to the Drudge Report, one of the top headlines basically agrees with her. It's like... Mm-hmm. Oppressive YouTube censorship policies spill over to violence.
Right.
So they're actually blaming YouTube policies for the shooter rather than being like, well, she was clearly disturbed. So Jared, you were talking about, you wrote an article kind of covering the way this was covered on the right, because there was just a lot of misinformation throughout the day, right?
Yeah, and there's a lot of stuff just made up, like that whole PETA... like animal rights activist thing. Like, I was kind of surprised. My girlfriend is vegan, and I had no idea she was like a radical leftist.
Right.
until I saw the right wing coverage.
Well, the interesting thing is, like, even with the Drudge, like you're saying, how they're talking about, they bring up the censorship angle, right? And it seems like even when I was reading the post you wrote today, Jared, about it, like, how they're sort of taking the censorship tack with this too, and they're being like, see what happens when you censor people? Like, they break and they start attacking, and like they're using like the hashtag censorship kills, the sort of way to spin it. Like, is that a pretty popular tack that people have been taking with this?
I mean, it's kind of weird. Like, some people in right-wing media have really sort of stepped away from going on that angle, but a lot of them... are really going into it, that, you know, really trying to prop up the fact that the shooter had uploaded videos on her channel being like super critical of YouTube's demonetization and like essentially like deprioritization of videos that had any sort of controversial topic, which has been like a huge thing in conservative media for the last few months. But that was kind of weird to me because, you know, the Alex Joneses of the world have spent the last especially couple months really ramping up the rhetoric for that.
Right.
Being like, oh, if we're censored, this is life or fucking death or something, you know, and like claiming that tech companies want to like murder Christians and stuff.
It's crazy.
You would think they would just like bolt running away.
Yeah, from that storyline, but they're actually being like, yeah, this is what happens. That top story on Drudge Report links through to a PJ Media story where they talk about how she was motivated by censorship of her YouTube channel, and then talk about a Trump supporting woman whose channel was like hidden, they say, and just connecting themselves to the complaints of a shooter. Like, rather than being like, wow, this has gotten way out of hand, they're just like kind of on board with it.
Yeah, and I think it's because like a lot of alternative media types, like the type of content creators that like will never be on Fox News or never be, you know, talking to Rush Limbaugh, all they have is a YouTube channel. The thought of like getting demonetized on YouTube is so, it's their livelihood,
yeah.
And I think what we're seeing is them getting incredibly desperate, because it takes a lot of mental gymnastics, at least like from my perspective, to align yourself with a shooter and sort of, you know, issue this sort of dark, I don't want to say warning, but you know what I mean, where it's insisting like, this is what you get when you try to do this.
Right. I mean, my own YouTube videos have, you know, dozens of hits, and you know, I don't have many subscribers, but it makes me have a murderous bloodlust.
Right,
so.
And that's totally justified.
Yeah, totally.
And, yeah,
totally.
I mean, your art is your life, and they're trying to take away your life, and therefore, no. But one thing that I actually agree with on the organization, by the way, when I say Drudge has this, Drudge just organizes different stories and then rewrites the headlines for them. So I'm not saying Drudge is writing these things. He's organizing the stories, but he has underneath like the top story claiming, you know, this is YouTube's doing and they had it coming. He has a story about how basically the two sides in America are more polarized than they've ever been. This is a claim by a physicist, which is something you hear a lot. But this physicist points out that we're consuming more news than we've ever consumed before, and we're getting more and more polarized. Like even now, we're getting more polarized than we were even like a couple months ago. And I think that really seems to be, I don't know, it seems like we've turned a corner. Like we were talking about the QAnon thing being fringe, but there was just a study that I talked about earlier this week where people ingested all of Twitter from 2006 to 2016 and looked at which stories traveled the most. And the stories that were lies traveled the best because they were wish fulfillment to people who, you know, wanted their beliefs confirmed. And I just think that as we get more polarized, the more we need fake stories to be true to confirm our beliefs. So there's going to be this economy of fake news stories that just kind of bubbles up because that's what the sort of landscape demands. All right, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. And we're back. The debate surrounding news, I feel like, hasn't evolved with the world we now live in. I think we still talk about stories and like whether they're true or false. Like the Sinclair thing, they were like, you know, a lot of people have bias and tell these fake stories just based on their bias. And so I've talked before about how 9/11, a big problem with our ability to stop the September 11th attacks and in the aftermath of the September 11th attacks was our ability to basically sort through all the data that we had. Like during the Cold War, intelligence gathering was a big thing. It was just like you got these few scraps from your Russian spies and then like you put them together into a coherent picture. And suddenly with the advent of like information technology, we had just fire hoses of information coming at us and we didn't know how to sort through all that information. And that made it so that we didn't get to the 9/11 attackers before it happened, because we knew about that. Like, that was a story you heard in the aftermath. Like, how did we knew about these people, but we didn't stop them? It was because they were like one of thousands of things we knew about. And I feel like the same thing is happening with how we address news. Like, we have just all this news coming at us now. And the question is not like whether some of it is false or whether some of it is true all the time, but rather like what we choose to focus on. And like this story about the border caravan, you know, people are focusing on this like it is this unprecedented thing. And it's something that's happened every year. And yes, it's happening. And yet, like, they're not making the story up. But by focusing on it, they're misleading you. It's
right.
Basically.
Well, and it's a story that is like, we now have a president where this kind of story is politically advantageous to the president, because he can weaponize it and distort it to evoke like this idea that, like, if it's, you know, other countries, they have refugees arriving on boats and they're like, oh, people are just crashing the shores and trying to get in our country, or storming the gates of our borders and things like that. And this is like kind of that perfect imagery that he needs. And then he can like pump his own dick up and be like, oh, you know, I told Mexico to break up the caravans, and they did because I told them. And now we'll have the military there to fucking shoot people who are seeking political asylum. Like, what the fuck are you going on about?
Right.
It's very weird. And I think another reason, too, is we also don't actually – we just focus on what is happening and not focusing on what is the root cause, right? So, like, if it's these migrants, why aren't you doing some more stories about Honduras and what it is these people are trying to escape?
Yeah.
Because that might resonate, or that might at least help people understand the world we live in, because everything isn't just what happened or what might happen this season on the New Jersey shore, which I am very much interested in. But I also want to know why people are moving and what the situations they're trying to escape. And I think that's another way our media does betray us, or is a disservice, is by not actually focusing on like, oh, well, why is this happening? Not just it is happening.
Yeah.
And just being like, oh, and that's fucked up.
And also overarching, like, we need to look at statistics. Like, just because the local news reports a crime doesn't mean that there aren't fewer crimes happening. Like, crime is at an all-time low. But the way that people talk on Fox News and just looking at your local news, you would never suspect that crime is at an all-time low.
No way.
Yeah.
But it's at an all-time low, and it has been going down for years because of, you know, a number of different factors that people never mention, and they don't mention those overall statistical trends because it's more interesting and just more consumable to tell the bite-sized stories of the crimes.
Right.
I feel like we've lost a lot of empathy in this nation.
Right.
And there's no focus on mental health. I think, like, a lot of these, like, news channels, they always, yeah, I agree. Like, it sensationalizes crime, but some people just need, like, mental health services.
Right.
And instead of just being like, this is a crazy man, like, hey, like, wait. Like,
this is someone who the system failed them.
Wait a second, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, it's
Anchorman 2 brings that up, you know? They're sensationalizing the news.
I mean,
yeah.
All of this basically.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mental health.
Yeah. I was like, yeah, what? Yeah. There was that scene.
Pretty deep.
Oh, I guess, yeah. When Kanye movie. Came out.
I mean, everything we're saying is basically summarizing the points made in Anchorman 2.
Yeah, people, hey, don't give away the secret to our show, right?
What?
But our philosophical North Star is Anchorman 2.
Anchorman 2.
Little known fact. But yeah, I think that's another reason, too, that we never really give people context. Like, no. We expect people to already know, or we have to explain to them. Like, you know, especially when you think about how segregation works in this country, a lot of people just go, oh, like an unarmed black person was shot or
right.
whatever. And not many people understand how through, like, legal segregation, through, like, housing initiatives
yes.
in this country.
And the highways.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
We were redlining. We were making sure. And, again, we talked about this yesterday, but redlining was the practice of identifying neighborhoods that were undesirable or where people would not get loans and things. It basically, essentially, to just say keep black people in these sections or
yeah.
keep minorities in these neighborhoods. And if they try and get out, just deny them a loan or give it at such a rate that it's not really, it's an untenable situation for them.
Like,
and
districting, all
yeah,
of that.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. And what people don't realize is that, like, especially like as a lot of black people migrated to the north out of the south in the early 20th century for, like, you know, industrial centers, like my grandparents did, they moved to Chicago from the south.
Chicago's the Dan Ryan.
Right.
Holy shit.
And in those neighborhoods, the way they were dealing with this influx of people of color was, you know, they've just created these very distinct neighborhoods that they segregated people. And the segregation is much more intense like you'd think, oh, in the South it must be crazy. No, right. It's actually in like the Northeast and shit, and in the Midwest, that's where it's the most pronounced.
This American Life did a undercover story where they sent people
They sent people
to inquire about apartments in New York City,
right?
And it was a white couple and then a black couple. And they would go, and the black couple had better credit, better all the things that the landlord was supposed to be looking for, and they would be turned away, and the white couple would be shown the apartment and basically courted to go there. And so that's the way that these things are enforced. It's like sort of a soft form of segregation where or like an invisible form of segregation. It's not soft in the sense that it's easy to get around.
Well, and people don't realize, they're like, oh, well, those people are just poor and that's why they live there. It's like, no, that area is designed to keep people in there and not coming into other areas, because whether it's like blockbusting practices where like black people would begin to move into white places and those realtors would hire black people to create this illusion of like a black takeover. And like being like, hey, you probably want, like to a white family, like, hey, you probably want to sell your home.
Right.
And then jack up the price for a black family to buy that home. Also, like you also think about how schools and services get funded. A lot of it's from property taxes too. So if you're in the hood, there's not a lot of tax revenue being generated. So that means the schools are underfunded. That means the schools get more segregated. And again, we just want to act like it's all these other things. Again, I think a lot of the times when we present stories, people don't fully understand the context of even how we get to the situation. And like one other point I want to bring up is that like one theory that is going around is that obviously not it's like a theory, but you know, a lot of people are sort of like, why does, you know, black white segregation have any kind of bearing or influence on fatal police shootings? What's that segregated black communities are just more heavily policed than others.
Right.
And in a study from 2013 showed that in Milwaukee, and Wisconsin has the highest racial index. It's a state racism index where it basically takes it looks at things like residential segregation, disparities in educational attainment, employment status, economic status, incarceration status, and they score each of these. Wisconsin tops the list for all of the when they factor all these things in. And when they looked at Milwaukee specifically, the state's largest city, half of black men between the ages of 30 and 40 have been in jail at some point in their lives. And the city's zip code 53206 is 95% black and has the highest incarceration rate, like I think in any county there. So basically what happens is the more segregated a place becomes, you're only underlining people's biases that are fed by the news, where if you think, oh, you're only showing news about people of color or like the violence being bad in these neighborhoods, then immediately the police are going to be like, oh, well, now I'm in a black neighborhood. I'm not in, oh, I deal with regular people who might not have to get shot. I'm immediately on the defense because now I'm in this crazy thing. And like there's all these subtle factors all play into sort of how we relate to the world. And I think it's a very important thing for people to kind of realize all of these stories have much more complex context.
I feel like that's really, like, I lived in Chicago for about 10 years before I moved out here. And like Rahm Emanuel is just systematically shutting down schools like in impoverished neighborhoods. And then I just pulled it up, like Chicago closes more schools in black neighborhoods, Chicago students add budget cuts. It's all of this stuff. Like, and then there are these like, some of my friends were teachers, and I don't know if this is true or not, but they were telling me that Rahm had this like initiative of like, look, we're building new schools and new charter schools. But these schools were empty because he was adding them in neighborhoods that didn't need them or like prominent neighborhoods, where like neighborhoods on like the west side or even the south side and some up in the north, like in Uptown where you really needed it, they weren't getting them.
Right.
And he was just shutting them down.
Yeah. I mean, and in Chicago, like a story that I hadn't really connected to the current spate of violence and murder was that they shut the Cabrini Green housing project down like a number of years ago. And that was a high crime area, but they basically turned it into high income living area and didn't give all the poor people who had lived there before a place to go. So like that created just a horrible
displaced people. Man.
So I don't know. These are, we're kind of all over the map, but I do just want to...
We're talking about Jeff Bezos, if you're just listening in. Jeff Bezos is a problem.
Jeff Bezos, hot. H-A-W-T.
He started this whole thing.
But I do think, you know, it's important to keep in mind that our role as news consumers is not just to look at individual stories and determine, you know, whether they're true or not, but to actually find the context. And, you know, the redlining story is a story that I just learned about on that This American Life episode like 4 or 5 years ago.
Right.
And I I couldn't fucking believe that I hadn't been told that. That's like the most important story of the 20th century when it comes to like how American life is lived in the current world. And it puts all these different things in perspective, but it's not talked about.
It's not talked about, yeah.
But I think we're now coming into a world where we have access to all this different information. And, you know, this new generation has the ability to, you know, find those important stories and tell those important stories. I've seen a lot of people, a lot of Zeitgangers out there doing the good work and telling people about the British coal gas study in the context of the gun conversation. And, you know, redlining is another one of those stories that is, it's like a keystone. It's one
of
those things.
We got to get Nicole Hannah-Jones on this show.
Right, we really do.
Got to get Nicole.
She's amazing. Yeah. Again, I think we definitely do people a disservice, not like we as a show, but just at the people, any like journalists, by not at least telling people why. Like, sure, there's a caravan, right? But also explain to people why there's this caravan. Like,
to celebrate.
Right. Yeah, right. Exactly right. They're just big fans of Dodge. It's actually being paid for by Chrysler. Yeah, check out this caravan, huh?
Yeah, but they're running from something. They need help from something.
And it's weird because, again, you know, there was like this Netflix show we brought up called Go Back to Where You Came From. It's like an Australian reality show where a lot of like sort of anti-immigrant xenophobic people had to actually understand where refugees were coming from and what they were escaping. And many people, it started to click for them because, you know, when you're that in proximity of truth, like you can't deny that. Right. And then you instantly like, oh, shit. Okay. I get it.
There were also like stories about when ICE was coming into town, like especially like small Texas towns, like it was like a meat manufacturing town. Like that's like a slaughterhouse town. Mm-hmm. And people they had worked with for years, decades, all of a sudden gone. And then the like town locals were like, oh, my God, where did this person go?
Right, right.
He was deported. No, they're only supposed to do the bad guys, and not realizing like this is going to affect everything and people you know and people you care about.
Right.
But it's like that context of like we're keeping the wall up to keep the bad ones out.
Well, it's easy to say that in middle America, where you probably don't have much interaction with people like immigrants or have firsthand experience with the outside world or just, you know,
My community was very insular. It was like the first time I had Thai food was when I moved to Chicago. I had no idea what it was.
And you thought it was shitty Chinese food.
I was like, what are these noodles?
Yeah, you're like, these noodles are weird looking.
But it was like everybody was like Christian. All Christian. So like for a very long time I was like ignorant on like Judaism and like understand like some of my friends were like, oh, it's like this is a very Jewish holiday, and I was like, what does that mean, you know?
What
you mean you don't believe in Jesus Christ?
hey look how small that fella's hat is.
Yeah. Hey, come here, you're gonna want to see this, mom and dad. They wear these little things.
Ain't no brim on there.
And I wanted to start out talking about the Mueller investigation because we talked about this story that broke in the Washington Post a few days back, the one that said that Trump is not a target of a criminal investigation. He is a subject.
Right.
So he's like somehow involved. He's not a witness, which is the most innocent sort of way you can be involved in an investigation. But he's also not the target. And the immediate reaction to that among sort of the mainstream media, for the most part, was that, oh, Mueller is sort of slow rolling this, trying to, you know, draw Trump into a interview. And that that's what we reported. We were like, yeah, so that must be what it is. But the more you think about it, and I actually read an article on The Hill from a law professor at, I think, George Washington, who I thought for a second, like after I read it, I was like, oh, this must be a Fox News talking head, because he was like, when is the media going to accept that Trump is not a criminal target, that like the Mueller investigation might not go the way they think it's going to go? He might not get caught up in this thing. And, you know, I looked this guy up. I was expecting him to be like Sean Hannity's main legal expert. But he is just a liberal law school person that I guess he has written some weird problematic stuff, Miles, you were pointing out.
It is another weird blog post. But I mean, I get the article is written pretty, you know, apolitically of just sort of like trying to there's not a lot adding up so far. And this is the thing, I think, even since the beginning, like whenever you know, when we've talked about should we talk about this thing and the Mueller thing or not, like we've always kind of just said on and off mic that it's like this, a lot of people are putting a lot of their eggs in the basket because this is like the one logical thing that could bring a conclusion that people would want,
right,
in terms of like some kind of karmic justice
and also kind of invalidate 2016, which right. people are still, that's like a wound that
yeah.
people are still, you know, dealing with,
right? So I get what the point he's making of just sort of like, yeah, because, you know, he brings up a lot of points, like people on CNN were just like, oh man, he's totally fucked or whatever. And yeah, and even yesterday we were or whenever that was, maybe the day before, I don't know, time's a blur, that, you know, we were saying you can go from a subject to a target to
right.
a
and that's
full
still
on.
The case.
That's still the case.
But that's
for
not
sure.
the main takeaway. That shouldn't be your first instinct.
No.
And like there were no stories in the immediate aftermath of this revelation in the Washington Post or in the New York Times that said what this guy was saying, which is this is really good news for Trump. This seems to suggest, okay, if they had said he was a subject but not a target, like when the investigation was starting, that wouldn't have been like a good or a bad thing because, you know, but he's been investigating him for like over a year now, and he still hasn't found anything that immediately ties him to the crime. That's not to say that he didn't commit a crime, and there's certainly a lot of smoke there, but it just might be that they aren't going to be able to find the evidence.
Right. Or it's just a bunch of people around him were doing the crimes.
Right.
You know.
I feel like it is like at this point, the Mueller investigation does sort of feel like when you're like trying to like undo a breakup or something, you're like, well, maybe if this happens,
right.
it'll work. And then it's like, that doesn't work. You're like, well, maybe if I do this, this will work. And it's been going on for so long. It's like,
right.
I mean, not that we should just accept that Trump is, I mean, absolutely not. But it does seem like, you know, every time there's a new thing, it's like, oh, we're kind of grasping at a straw there. And then that doesn't go through. And then it's another thing.
Yeah. I mean, the sexiest thing has been like indictments of people like Paul Manafort. But like even the Russians were like, whatever. Those are people that they just found for like fraud and other things like that. But I think at the end of the day, it's hard to speculate either direction, right? Like there's not enough for you to be like, oh, well, nothing, like guys, come off it.
Yeah.
And there's also not enough also to be just nutting yourself when you're like, right. whoa, dude, fucking, this guy's indicted the fucking. So, yeah, I think it really all depends on how you look. I'm just so hesitant because this dude, like, honestly, I don't know what will stick to this guy that will get even the Republicans in the House to say like even a bad thing about him.
Right.
So, regardless of this, if you really want to go to sleep at night and give yourself a North Star to live by, focus on the midterms.
Right.
And just work on just taking back the fucking House and the Senate. Like,
right.
that's really how
that's
you're going to curb his power.
Human beings can actually do stuff.
Yeah, because Bobby Digital is not going to come through and be like, get out of here, Donald Trump. That was my RZA impersonation,
yeah.
by the way.
Bobby Digital. Very. It would have been another great Twitter handle.
When the RZA switched to Bobby Digital for that one album.
Right.
What about Bobby Mueller or?
Bobby Moynihan.
Okay. Mary fuck kill.
Okay.
Bobby Moynihan. Uh-huh. Bobby Mueller. Mm-hmm. Bobby Durst.
Oh,
Robert
Durst.
Mary fuck kill.
I know you want to marry Robert Durst.
I want to marry Robert Durst.
Because that
Durst.
Was a handle I think you were exploring,
Jamie
right?
Jamie Loftus Durst is too long, unfortunately.
Or Durst Wife 3, I think is the
Durst
one.
Wife 3 would have been a dope one.
I will say that, yes, I would marry Robert Durst. Okay, moving on.
Well, just because I want to die. Just because I'm looking to die.
An efficient way to go. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. And we're back. We wanted to finally cover the story of one of the good people teaching our children, doing the Lord's work down in Florida. What her name is
Diana Volatich,
and she is a social studies teacher at Crystal River Middle School in Florida, and she was known online as Tiana Dalachov, which is the pseudonymous host of a white supremacist podcast called Unapologetic, where she talked some crazy shit about race science and just
everything,
was,
anti-Semitism,
just all the bad
it's
stuff.
All there. The crazy thing was, I think HuffPo outed her like March 8th, and her defense was, all my comments were quote political satire and exaggeration, and the persona was a quote unquote hobby. I'm a part-time racist. Right. You know, I'm a hobbyist racist.
I got a Hobby Lobby, right. Which actually is the lobby store of racists.
For racists, yeah, exactly. And I work there. And she was also bragging, like, on her show, like, she was like, you know, I'm a teacher, and I actually inject all this shit into my teachings and things like that.
They just don't know it.
Yeah, they just don't fucking realize.
That frequency.
And so basically, you know, that did not sort of rub parents, the school district, the right way. And she only finally today resigned after much pressure. So we will see what happens. But it's crazy. Like, just to give you an example, like the kind of shit that they were talking about on her show. There was like one episode where there's a guy on who's like, I don't like racists either. Even though probably in the most technical sense of the word, you could probably say I'm racist because I do believe that some races of people are inferior and superior in certain ways. I would never say black people are, you know, crap people. They're inferior at everything, but there are certain things certain races can do better. Asians are way better at math in the aggregate than white people, and white people build cultures better than Asian people or black people, and we can view it all throughout history. So that's what her guest says. And then as host, she responds with, I think I would align myself similarly to your sentiment there. Like, I would pretty much say, yeah, okay, if believing that certain races specialize in certain things makes me racist, then I guess that's what I am, because I do share your sentiment there. Everything you've said, like, meshes perfectly with what, you know, I'm kind of, like, thinking on the inside here. So, yes, that was a woman teaching the children.
Social studies.
Social fucking studies.
Yes. That is double messed up. She did say that, as an adult, my decisions are my own. My family has nothing whatsoever to do with my social media accounts or my podcast, okay? Leave my family out of it. But what's lurking in that family's closet? You know what I mean? Right. A hood. from them, I humbly ask for forgiveness, as it was never my intention to cause them grief while engaging in a hobby on my personal time.
I mean, the kind of her tweets that she deleted were like, white privilege? Prove to me that it exists.
Oh, my God.
Show me statistics that prove whites benefit
economically. The fact that it took you this long to get fired is proof that it exists.
Well, that's because she was using her fake-ass, you know, Twitter name.
Right.
And then was even, like, this is just to underline her shittiness as a teacher. She says, this is a tweet that was deleted. You know America's education system is designed to enable victimization when teachers are forced to learn about institutional racism and prove it's real when it isn't. I literally feel brain cells dying as I read this bullshit. Hashtag Sunday morning. Not the No Doubt song. So, yeah. Cool.
She definitely was listening to that. Sunday morning. Go to church.
Yeah, so she's out of here. So
and get out.
And for some reason, when I was picturing this happening in my mind, I don't know what I was expecting, but I wasn't expecting her to look
so hot.
Like the exact blend of all of my teachers growing up. And she looks exactly like...
If you look
like,
at this photo, you will see elements of like other teachers that
you've
had. Oh,
for sure,
100%. That is my teacher, yeah.
Looks like a computer.
She
algorithm.
Has like nice teacher eyes too.
Yeah, damn. She just looks they like a kind
they
social
always
studies
do.
Teacher.
That's how they get you.
Yeah.
Well,
never trust a teacher with a kind smile.
Yeah.
Or a loving touch. Excuse me.
The lyrics to Poison. I don't know. Kids, keep an eye on your teachers,
I guess. Sorry to throw that on to you, kids. Not only are you responsible for your own safety in school, please monitor the racist behavior of your
Make
teachers.
Make sure they're not intentionally injecting racist ideals into your social studies
lessons.
Listen
to Pink Floyd, you know?
Yeah.
Right. That's all the education you need.
That's all you need, bro. I didn't go to college, bro. It's got the wall.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's Weekly Zeitgeist. Please like and review the show. If you like the show, means the world to Miles. He needs your validation, folks. I hope you're having a great weekend, and I will talk to you Monday. Bye.